So we're talking about one of the most important things. If you go to the DDEX website, you will learn that it's actually all about sex. No, it's about metadata. Equally exciting, I would think. Thanks for being here this morning. I hope you are not too overhung from yesterday's proceedings. It's a small group. We'll start with a little bit of discussion here. If you have a question, please just stand up, just ask. There's no need to for any formalities. I think it's small enough that we can just do it like this. Let's start with the usual introduction round, so that we all know who's sitting here on stage. We can start here with Hélène, go down the line.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for being here this morning. So I'm Hélène. I'm representing the tech services part in Deezer. Deezer is a French streaming platform. I'm excited to talk about metadata today. We'll get into details, but it's a huge part of what we do and what we need.
So what's metadata for you then?
For me, it's the description of a track, of an audio, of what you have, like, so the exact, like, way set of descriptions that will give you the more accurate element on the track.
Jean-Luc?
Hello, I'm Jean-Luc. I'm the founder of Music Story. It's a company dedicated to music metadata enhancement, working with DSPs and PROs to enhance their metadata user experience and on a collection, acting internationally and based on the work of tech aggregation and music knowledge and music editors. So we are the right place.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Angela Singh. I work at Sound Exchange. We're a music tech company. We provide products and services to over 650,000 creators globally. Help DSPs fulfill their requirements and advocate for creators to get paid for their work. So glad to be here and talk about this fun subject.
And my name is Niels Rump. I'm working for DDEX, one of the, or maybe the only organization that develops standards for the communication of metadata all along the music supply and value chain. So all of those folks sitting here and lots of the folks in the audience will be using DDEX standards in one way, shape, or another. One of the things that I think interests all us, or what we all think about metadata, is that it's core to companies' success. Without that, none of the companies can actually operate. How essential is metadata, good quality metadata, for each of your organizations to fulfill the role that you play in the supply and value chain? Let's do the same order again. Doesn't really matter. I think you set yourself so that we
can do it like your way. All the questions, here. Maybe not. I think it's what you just mentioned is really important, that it's core, and it's core throughout the value chain. We all have different reasons why we need metadata and how we use them, and we'll talk probably a bit more also on more specific examples after. But it's really important to know that we all need metadata and at different levels, and we use them in different ways, but we need to have some sort of consistency and to make sure that throughout, we've discussed that a lot while preparing, that throughout the value chain, it's important to find this consistency and this way, more specifically on DSP, or as we call it now, ESP, Experience Service Platform, in our case. It's really at the heart of everything. When you ask me what is metadata, I said it's description, but it's really that. We have a catalogue of 200 million tracks, so we don't display all of them, but you need to know what is in this catalog. You need to understand. You need to understand if you have duplicates. You need to be able to work with the clues that you have to manage this catalog and to offer the right experience after to your users. And without metadata, that's not something that you can do. If without metadata, it's just 200 million tracks floating around that you don't know how to use. So definitely core to us.
Yes, and so I would add that metadata integration is really a challenge because the coverage has to be huge now. And so it's not just to get the right metadata to change, to enrich the user experience or to get the right collecting process. It's also to get the good metadata on the, you know, at a good pace, at a good quality, at a good frequency. And it's really, you have to think about metadata as part of metadata. Each piece is enhancing the experience. So it's a huge challenge to work with people, you know, an executive or in our clients to make the most of that. How I could get the right metadata on the right coverage to enhance this, because it's, if it's too small, too low coverage, it will do nothing. So there is a real stake behind that to enhance not only the metadata itself, but the process of integration of metadata, which is not easy.
And with integration, I assume you mean both internally within your own systems infrastructure as well as with other people, isn't it?
Yeah, sometimes it's even integrated into the client's infrastructure, but we do that too. And even if we do a lot of the work, the integration inside is still a challenge because, tech teams are stuck, you know, slammed, and it's difficult to have a sense of priority on metadata because it's kind of transversal component enhancing thing, and when it gets to project and priority inside the client, it's not easy to get that. It's really, you have to transform it in projects.
And you have, it's moving so fast. You have so many new content, so many new needs, so many things that we don't know already. I agree. Also, this integration has to be a smooth process throughout the way.
For us on SoundExchange, our core, both on the sound recording side and on the publisher administration side, is we have to have ways to work with a DSP to understand usage and bring that into the system. We have to then connect that to rights owners in order to pay them out. In order to do that, you need the metadata. You have to have, as they've said, integrations with all those points, but that metadata is what gets you where you've been streamed, what you have to be paid for, and how you pay it out. And so that is the critical, you can use it as a grocery store barcode. If you don't have it and you don't have all the elements of it, you're just not going to get, you can risk yourself not getting paid, your credit's not being out there. We joke that it's the non-sexy part of the business, but it's actually the core to being able to make sure everything runs properly.
We could all do without the music, but without the metadata, we can't. Is that what you're saying?
Well, So now we're going to have a catalogue of just metadata.
SoundExchange traditionally work with sound recordings. Not that long ago, you ventured out into the side of the musical work side. How did the integration of those two different parts of the industry, and traditionally the people who deal with sound recordings and the people who deal with musical works, they don't particularly like each other. And they have different approaches to things, and they have different data models and all of those things. How did that work when trying to integrate that together?
Well, I think you rely on standards to be able to
good
even
answer.
to even start. There are totally different philosophies on how musical works content is passing along. You still have the lack of share splits and who's on the songwriter splits. It takes longer to get that information. Mapping that to a recording, is a whole nother step. And for us, because our philosophy from day one on the sound recording side was to always source from rights owners, what we've been able to do with the works is then marry that up. It was eye awakening on where the standards are for recordings versus works. But there's a vast improvement today than 5-6 years ago. But for us, the infrastructure was it was built, and that was why we wanted to go out and do this. And it's been an educational process through with the publisher side as well as the recording side and linking that together.
You mentioned sources of metadata. Where do you guys, and that applies to all of you, not to me because I just work in developing standards that brings the metadata to them, but where do you source the data and how do you judge what metadata is good, bad, and ugly?
I can go with that one. Yeah, because we are the metadata aggregator, so I guess it's for us. So it's through agreements. We are under agreements with the labels and some other, available data for that, like the MLC API or this type for the publishing side. And you have partners. For example, we have in Music Story, we are channel partners of Lyric Finds, and we are working also with credits from another company called Muso.ai. So sources are there, and you have processes to validate it. It can be approved, not necessarily on a large scale, but you are working on the coverage of that. And it's a challenge to integrate this correctly and to get the most of that, and to have the right frequency and pace to deliver that. Of course, you have the data coming from the internet, and now the AI is changing the game about that, because we can really predict some metadata here and there and use that, and some other do that, perhaps not that, with not the ethic needed for that, but we can, I think we will dig into that after. No?
Yeah, I think the AI discussion will certainly come.
So that's super interesting what you're saying in jumping on that. So at Deezer, we have a partnership, for example, with you that enables us to get those insights, to get everything. And we also get some elements that come with the delivery of the tracks, of the sound. So it's also a matter of being able to compare, to work with our partners to say, okay, where is the truth, if we can call it the truth, and what is closer to the truth, and also adding some elements using, again, the tools, using AI, using our users' behaviors as well, to be able to say, okay, I know that maybe we're exploring things around how do you automatically tag genres, but more like on how people consume music, and you really have all these elements of these tools where you can not only use what is delivered to us, but also the users, and we also work directly with the audio. So being able to, track a song, analyze it, and be able to say, okay, I know that just with the sound, this is a female or male voice, so... It's a spectrum, of course, but like you can add things with the audio. So it's really different elements coming together, making sure that you combine all of them, but you also make sure that you compare and you try to avoid bias. So that's also why you need to definitely work with the partners.
Yeah, it's a perpetual matching process with a lot of sources, and it's a very collaborative work, because a lot of people nowadays think there is a one-stop solution somewhere in the internet, but no, it doesn't exist. And you have to work in a collaborative way on targets. I want, explicit, I want credits, I want this coverage. And it's really projects we have together, together too.
As I said earlier, foundationally, because it's so important to pay accurately to the rightful owners and the contributors on the song, we're sourcing first and foremost from a rights owner. We get the performer contributor information, but there are gaps in the data. So then you have to start looking at ways you can, try to fill it, get information, work with Music Story and others. But then we also do validation. We force the creator to say this is accurate, this is not accurate from that standpoint. So, first and foremost is to try to get it from the most authoritative source, then look at other ways to bring in verifiable information and validate that from there.
maybe just to add also, and I think that's also different levels of where you have some metadata where you absolutely need to make sure that you have the right one, the truth. Like if you want to make sure that you pay the right artist, you need to have the right name. So this layer, you really need to go super in details. And if it can come from the person who actually wrote the song or these kind of things, it makes a lot of sense. And then you have some more subjective things. At Deezer, we add the mood, for example, to a track, but nobody knows how to describe. If I tell you, oh, is this song a happy song or a party song, you will give me different ways to describe it. So that's where also models are interesting, because then you can you don't know how to describe it, but you know how to tag it. And I think it's this distinction between, like, where do you need something that is 100% true versus where can it be subjective? Where is it okay if you put more party song than a happy song in the different buckets, because those are connects.
Again, if there are any questions or any contributions that anybody from the audience wants to make, just step up to the microphone and we'll gladly listen to and respond to whatever you have to say. One thing that strikes me is, Jean-Luc, you talked about the whole thing being collaborative, but it's also a competitive industry. How do you strike the balance, especially for a DSP that wants to have the best consumer experience and have a better consumer experience than its competitors, with this need to collaboratively develop metadata, not standards, the wrong word here, but metadata models that can work. DDEX certainly works on communicating those metadata fields, such as mood and a theme of the music and those kind of things. We don't get into how that is derived. We simply provide a channel for that. But there seems to be a tension from my perspective there.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I would say nowadays you have a flow of information coming from the internet, and now you can work with AI to deal with that. But it's not the truth, as it's said. We can get closer and closer to the truth. That's part of the game. That's why in Music Story we use a lot of people knowing the music to validate all that. It's not necessarily a huge amount of work because of curation and AI now, but you have to say, okay, it's good enough. Perhaps it's not the truth, because I strongly believe in the process to make validate things through the artist, but it's not, you know, today it's more than, you know, 100,000 tracks per day, so it's not possible for every track. And so you have to have this process and to work really in connection with a client to know where you are heading. Because if you want just standard metadata, you can produce standard metadata. You're right, there is competition on that. We have some competitors. But working with a client where it's core, where it's specific, it's really a specific work we can do. You know, for example, I know with Deezer, the recommendation engine has to be very specific to Deezer. Not saying the external data is not necessary to do that, but there is a special source inside to use it, you see? So we, metadata provider, we have to understand how the clients are working, same as for the recording part or the publishing part, to get where they want us to be. To avoid, obviously, a non-core business, because doing all this aggregation coming from the internet, sign the agreements with all the sources, It's a work, and perhaps they have more to think about, you know, to get the most for the artist or have a better user experience for the DSPs.
Yeah, I think we all want to provide the experience, and as you're saying, like, there are some sets of metadata that are common to everyone, and then it's a question of what do you do with it. But then you have the metadata that are like, this is more specific, this is how you're going to be able to use it. And it can have a big impact, not only for the user, but also for the artist. Like if we receive something that is not, I don't know, like if it's a Latin song and that is tagged as a metal song, suddenly it's in the recommendation for someone that is currently listening to metal, and they're going to say, I don't like it. And it's not going to be good for the artist. It's not because the song is bad, it's just that it has nothing to do in that part of the recommendation. So it's really important to also be able to have that quality so that then in the way we use it, we can have a quality for both parties.
And perhaps in addition of that, a lot of people are just working on the audio to retrieve very easily metadata, because working on the audio, you can immediately have millions of tracks with moods and things like that. But the assumption of a genre, for example, is not that easy from the audio. And you really need to rely also on the semantic side of metadata to know, because there is a kind of cultural things in the semantic metadata. This artist has a story. Is this from this town? Is it, you know, there is a cultural thing. So it's to make the most of a recommendation, you can use now more and more the both side of things. And AI is helping. Okay.
Coming to AI in a second, but this all sounds rather complex, rather expensive. Do we have any evidence that collecting good metadata actually pays for itself and even more generates revenue, or is it a loss leader?
I think from SoundExchange's side, I would say it pays for itself. So by sourcing it, by the most authoritative source that you have, for the first dollar that's put in our system, we pay out 91% of that. So if you think about the millions of lines of usage that month that's getting processed, and you're getting 91% of that money out the very first time, that's telling you that that data is what is helping you get that paid out to the rightful owners. And then it'll take us, you know, about 2-3 more years of commingling through that and getting it out almost, you know, 96% out the door with just good data. But you have to have that to be able to do that. But that'd probably be the way I could describe, you know, how it pays out for folks.
I think on that side, it's quite easily to understand or to see that if you don't know who the writer is, you can't pay the writer because you don't know whom to pay. It's fairly straightforward. Do we have similar evidence on the DSP side?
Maybe just first to add on what you're saying is that we also see that we now have like a fingerprint solutions, so that enable to also identify samples. For example, so if you're able to say in this song, this was there are these stems or these symbols, that's also a good way to say, okay, we're generating additional value because we know what's happening. And then for the users, but I will let you, Jean-Luc, maybe develop that, because like if you start displaying additional elements like pictures or these kind of things, then you have impacts.
Yeah, we have some figures about that. As I explained, we are a channel partner of LyricFind, so we are working also in the really lyrics area, and we have really, you know, about the engagement, you know, driven by the lyrics. It's from 10% to 20%, and it depends. If you synchronize, you can go upper, you know, beyond that. And if it's translated, it's in your own language, it's even better. And the way you integrate, you know, in the user experience, the additional metadata, you were speaking about images. Images can be a great experience because you just listen to the music, but your eye has to go somewhere. So you have to tell a story also to the eyes. And the more you work on this integration, the more engagement you have. It's really ROI of metadata.
Before we have the question there. One of the things that we have found, one of our standards was implemented, Mead standard, by a couple of companies, and when they communicated rich metadata to DSPs, when record companies sent data to DSPs, it was about a 10% immediate markup of that track, and at the same time, the skip rate, what you just talked about, the metal, the country song in a metal playlist, that went down by 10%. So it's a good 20% markup if you have decent metadata. At least that's anecdotal evidence that we found. Fiona, there's a question.
Yeah, hi. Fiona Hamm from Music Team. I wanted to draw a point with the earlier question where you ask about competition. and the point where you just spoke about the profitability and the costs and the money in the pockets of creators by metadata. So I'm wondering if we can start entering more in the, I live in utopia, by the way, that we start entering more in a world where instead of being competitors, we're all brothers and sisters. And that if there were more companies that were compliant to DDEX, we would have, we would be reducing the, because right now we're all janitors. We're all cleaning up somebody else's mess because it was ping pong, you know, who's responsible for what. So my question is, if we were all to be compliant, which would be the next standard? You're talking about Mead right now. How much more actual money, you know, we would be able to continue pushing towards creators, because we would be spending less time cleaning up and would be able to start pushing forward more standard, more profitability in creators' pocket.
Take this one. First, you know, metadata, it's humility. So we are not that competitors. In fact, we know all it's a huge problems to solve. And it's a never-ending work. So even if we are competitors, the other guy knows something I don't know, and I know something, you see. So we are not that, you know, we are all involved in that. And second thing, I have a big respect for the standards, but the content, you know, it's not just to standardize, because it's a question of availability of the data, and who will do the work to get the right metadata. You can have the whole music industry, you know, with a kind of backbone, super backbone of metadata, but the way you are, you know, just, you know, put this the right metadata in that, and who is doing the job is key.
I was going to say the exact same thing. Let's say we got to that perfect place of that happening. There's still X percentage that's going to be a gap because we cannot get folks to understand the importance of completing that data, right? Your ISNI, your IPI, whatever it may be at the beginning, what are your splits? The ISRC complete data, all of the musical work composition. So we still have that part of our industry where we've got to continue to beat the drum of completeness of the data is equally important as the way we exchange it, standardize it. And I think that you'll always have that percentage where we have that gap, and we have to continue to educate on the importance of that from the studio level on.
And you were mentioning the importance of matching as well, because what we see and with in the DSP as well is that we can have 10 times the track, and if we are able to identify that it's 10 times the same track, you can start matching also those metadata and say, okay, here I have this info, there's the big topic of matching ISRC and ISWCs, all of these elements, and that's where having multiple actors with multiple touch points, I think, can help there as well.
To me, I think the question, there are two different parts of the question. One is this core metadata that especially people like Sound Exchange need to do their operations, and that you need to be able to offer the products. On that, yes, the question about adherence to the standards and everybody adhering to good business practice is essential, no question. We also need to work on collaborative ways, I think, to properly and in a structured way clean up any messes, any spills that may be. For example, DDEX is currently working with the folks from ISNI on how to deal with cases when there are mismatches between party data. Those kind of things need to happen. I think the industry is getting better with those things, but we're not there yet by any stretch of the imagination. There's a big project, for example, going on for early allocation of international standard work identifiers by record companies, which was unheard of a couple of years ago, but maybe if that can happen in the future, it will create this bridge between a recording and a musical work, which will make your works licensor or folks or works payout people make their lives much easier. The other side is the softer metadata, where I think adherence to standards is much less important than in the first bit. It's just finding the right people to create the data for you. At least that's from the builder of the pipes, the view from that point of view. We've mentioned AI in in here. It's, well, I think everybody has to talk about AI, otherwise they'll be fired or something. AI is the new blockchain, I think. Actually, I think AI is actually a game changer, whereas blockchain is just another storage solution. I know, not a very popular view, but there we are. So how does AI change things for us in the metadata world? For me, I just see the potential of it, just a huge pile of metadata coming my way, generated by whomever, for whomever, and I have no idea what's good. I have no idea whether to believe it. What's with that?
That's a good question. And good luck. I think one of the big thing is looking at what I was saying at the beginning, like the size of a catalog, the size of the number of metadata. You get tools that enable you to better filter this metadata, better compare, better evaluate the quality. So you have those elements where you can manage like large amount of data, and it's not actually new. We just it's things that have been done forever on different elements. So you have those parts where you have AI, you have machine learnings. I was mentioning fingerprint earlier. That is for me a big thing, the ability to work on the audio and to really, from the audio, being able to retrieve some information. So these are examples for me on how it can help with the filtering. And I think we'll go maybe a bit later on it, but there's another part that is more around which new type of metadata can we work on, but maybe it's a second part.
Yeah, it's already a reality, because yesterday you announced you removed 26 million of tracks from your catalog, which is quite impressive.
Like white noise and stuff like this. just
26. Okay, so... for that, it's a real concern now to recognize if a tune has been generated by AI or not. And for this, we need to collaborate, you know, on what it is. It's a new description of what is going on. And so with Deezer, we work on some project about voice cloning. So you can recognize a voice pattern, but you have to make the connection with the right metadata. Is it Elvis Presley or not? You see, because if it's X, okay, you know it's X. But if it's Elvis Presley, it's different. And on the other way, you have also the music generated by prompt. And for prompt, they are very often they are using also, you know, metadata, but kind of metadata like make me a song, makes me feel like the sunset or, you know, the desert or things like that. And there is a way to counter that, to use the right metadata to know it's a real song or a song generated by metadata. We have some R&D work with Deezer on that, which is very promising. And we can see a lot of partners more based on audio, with API now, like Earcam Amplify in France or Plex here in the US, you know, proposing something which is very efficient on that. But for me, it's just the beginning of a prompt war, because you have the people generating, you know, the music will use more and more accurate description to generate more and more, you know, music. And on the other way, we have really to qualify more and more in depth and to use AI to counter the AI. So it's just the beginning for me.
What is interesting there is that you have like different aspects to it. You have either on one side, like the flood of new content that is coming, and how do you qualify that, and what do you do with it? And that's a big part. And with tools, with AI, you can start identifying patterns, so you can start having insights on that, just so you don't get overcrowded. And then there's a second part that is around copyright infringement, and how do you start detecting this kind of elements? So you have two aspects to it where you can work.
And perhaps, sorry, just one few words about that. It depends also on the intention, because if an actual artist is using AI, it's not bad. if it tends to drone all the platforms in songs, what's the intention? To tweak the royalties, you see? So you have to think about that.
You know, it's evolving. We're all in the space. It's going to continue to evolve. So I couldn't say that we have like an answer of what it should be today. But as an industry, we really have to be on top of accepting that this is going to be part of the DNA as we go forward. But how to do it fairly, ethically, but also allow for it, right? And so, you know, we're talking at DDEX about how to go ahead and flag that there's AI of any sort in that particular track, because as the rules, as the copyright laws evolve, we don't want the proliferation of this to then have us now cleaning that data up as we go along. So can we at least accept that we've got to get a way to be tracking this, understanding it, as things evolve and as we try to fill out how to do that? You know, from our standpoint, it's still going to be, to what you just said, it depends how it's being used, but it's very important we use the three C's, consent, credit, and compensation for the artists whose song or voice or what likeness is being used, that they're accredited for that. But it's an evolving process. The laws still have to get there. But I think because of the proliferation that can be coming from these AI-generated tracks, we have to find ways to identify it so we don't get so far behind the curve of how we are able to then use that in the future.
And what is interesting is also we don't know yet. Yeah. So we don't know like what will the legal framework would be tomorrow. So you want to add some metadata on what's happening now so that you can do things in the right way, in an ethical manner, but you don't quite know. So you have to find ways. We are exploring, as you were saying, we have research projects on like what can you do with identifying that is a similar voice or these kind of elements, because we anticipate that it's going to be a topic. So it's always like keeping us on our toes.
So.
Yes, my name is Mark, and I work at Sound Exchange, so I'm excited to be here. This is super cool. A couple of things I just wanted to maybe flag. I'm interested in your guys' thoughts on actually blockchain possibly being part of the solution for AI, because we're going to be inundated with so many pieces of content. How do we know what's real and what's not? That's a great question, right? I think how can we actually see how it could work for us? Maybe instead of looking at it as a problem, maybe it could be more of the solution. Second thing, you mentioned predictive AI. I'd be curious how you use it and maybe how you see that being used in the future.
Do we start with the second one?
Yes. So predictive AI. So you have to make the assumption that we are all searching for the truth, but we are not yet there. So, and you have to accept that going very close to the truth is something you can get with a predictive AI. Not saying it's authoritative, you know, but you are getting closer. So I'm a strong believer that, and perhaps it's also the answer to your first question, that the validation process, and NFT perhaps can be a good partner there, is something we have to work on. But we can't wait for that. You can, with 100,000 tracks per day, you can make everybody, you know, validate the metadata. That's not possible. So you have to make assumptions. And the AI, you know, to, for example, to guess what could be the genre, you know, you can use audio, but now you can also use semantic and, of course, generative AI coming from all the internet to say, okay, it's probably, you know, urban music by 95%. And so it's perhaps good enough for, you know, certain part of, if you think about the use after, even for, you know, collection, you know, because you can start from that to gain time and to get closer, and after that you have to, it's an help in the end of the day.
Yeah, it can help at least start there and then have you do the validation from that.
But I think one of the questions there is, how can I be sure that, and you kind of hinted at that, Jean-Luc, that the training of the algorithm actually hasn't been tainted, that I have, that you try to find the right artist, writer for a specific piece of music, But because I know that there is something that you will search AI for, I will just flood certain parts of the internet with my name, and suddenly I wrote that song according to your algorithm. But I didn't. I think there are some things where we still need to learn a lot about...
But that's also where, like, you have research projects that are also working again on the audio. Like, if this has nothing to do with what this artist is usually doing, you can start to see patterns. So there are a lot of open things, a lot of research projects to help all of these elements. And
So, one thing: don't trust ChatGPT.
Never.
First. But you can get some interesting information from that. But the what is really important is to get, you know, internal reliable AI engine, learn with your own, you know, perhaps vectorial database, this type of things, to make things, learn from your own system, and to and you have to mix two. That's the challenge of now. I think it's that. And the answer to your question is probably, okay, you can get a part of the external information, but you have to really to make your own system based on all the metadata you generate or we are generating together.
Know the limitations of your system is basically, well, it's not different from what you do today. It's just the parameters are slightly different and we need to learn them.
And I think what you just said also, like, together, collaboration, you would get some different, again, some different people at different places in the value chain. So you, because metadata, you don't need to have metadata, you need metadata to do something. So you will be able to compare based on the usage and on what you want to do. So also, the more collaboration you have, the better the chances are that you get accurate things.
So,
my name is Jacob Varghese from Noctil. I'm a founder. We use, it's a metadata management company. We use machine learning for the matching. But my question is, so we talked about the work and the sound recording side, the master side, the repertoire, the quality. When we talk about the usage, not from the DSPs, probably most of the DSPs provide ISRC, but what about the, you know, UGC-based platforms and the radio station? Probably that's not, you know, relevant in US, but around the world. A lot of, you know, public performance. Those data, is there any, do you have any recommendation for the standards or what do you think? Because most of them are not, you don't have enough information to even match, right? So do you have any recommendations for the integration?
I think you. I guess you hear a general sigh from all around you because that's the biggest gap in the music industry, I would think, today. The reporting of a radio station, of a DSP, will typically be on either release or resource level. It cannot be any other way. Because that's what they're giving their consumers. So somewhere you now need to find the bridge from the ISRC to the ISWC, so the International Standard Recording Code, or any other identifier that identifies the recording, to the identifier for the musical work, the International Standard Work Code, for example. And no, there is no universal solution that works now. For existing recordings, you typically find the links. They are well known, but for anything that's written now and recorded now, how do you get that that link in as early as possible? Should it be happening in the studio? Yeah. There are projects afoot. I talked about one where a record company that actually issues a sound recording and markets a sound recording can or will hopefully soon be able to allocate an a code for the work. And it's then later on, if you like, cleaned up. Maybe that work had already been registered somewhere else and it already has an identifier. That's fine. There are mechanisms to then bridge from the identifier that has been allocated there to the actual identifier. we need these kind of projects to actually come to fruition so that those links between works and recordings are actually ubiquitous. It's getting there, but we're not there yet in any way, shape, or form.
So we started it to that point. We built a tool called MDX, where for pre-releases in the U.S., the labels are getting the links to the works ahead of time, and that it's still incubating and working through, but it's a very good tool to try to get ahead of it. So then you get to, okay, how do you do this in adoption for UCG content and other things like that? But, you know, there is this concept that at pre-release, can we get that link done? And we've been doing that for a few years with some of the major labels and major publishers ahead of time as we go along. So it's that type of stuff, and what Neil said, that if we can maybe get the links ahead of time, perhaps we can, you know, for the future, try to fix the issue, but we still have the back catalog to deal with, too.
Sir?
Yeah, hi. I'm curious about, like, what is a lonely musician supposed to do? Like, what is a single person in the studio supposed to do? And whether there's a succession of steps, like, you know, you can get an ISRC code from, say, TuneCore or from DistroKid, but that's their ISRC code. It's not your ISRC code. And I'm just wondering.
No.
Well, but they
own it. It's the ISRC of that sound recording. But nobody owns that code.
So my point is, if I'm in a studio and I want to get an ISRC code, an ISWC code, you know, what are the steps for doing that? And also, I think it's a good point about this stuff being generated in the studio at the time. And I know that I saw a Ripiato video with Nicholas Melander talking about Session Studio, this app where people can actually use it there, you know, and do the splits and everything like that. I'm just wondering, I think moving forward, it might be easier than trying to fix the entire back history. And are there some solutions that are available for just, you know, regular musicians? And what would you recommend as a sort of a toddler best practice for getting your metadata in the right place?
One thing that I usually recommend is if you watch the credits due, you talked about Sessions, but you have five basic codes that everyone should know about, be able to make sure that their track has that, and that's a good tool to use to start. You have ISRC managers that issue ISRCs, so learning that process as well. And then making sure that, you know, each of your creators has an IPI, ISNI, IPN, however you want to do that. At the studio level, sorting out the splits is very important, and that's why something like Sessions and other things where you can do these things at studio level and have that ready for folks to use is very important. But I usually recommend try watching that credits due, because that's a good way to start from there to understand the five basics to have at any time.
And these tools, these tools, Sessions is one, there are others, Viva Collect is one, and so forth. They typically enable or help artists to collect the essential information. You basically need to not only agree amongst the people who are there, who did what, and what are the entities that were created? Is it the work, and is it the sound recording? And if no work was created, what work has been used? Those things need to be written down, and ideally then put into an electronic format. The advantage that some of those systems, VivaSound and Sessions, are, as far as I'm aware, amongst them, they use a DDEX standard called RIN to be able to communicate that information into the supply and value chain. So far, not many record companies are taking that, and if you're self-publishing, then that doesn't help you whether a record company takes it. But at least you then have it in a electronically readable format that can then be shared with others. But otherwise, making sure that you have all of those information that Angela has mentioned is the crucial bit.
If I can add also, you have also other application to catch up on that. I don't know if you know Muso.ai, but it's a way to, you know, cross-certify the credits. It's not from the studio, but it can be after. So this type of initiative also, you I think you should take care about that, because it's not only in the studio. Sometimes somebody come to you and say, hey, was you the singer in this song? And you can say yes or not, and you can validate that. So now you have more and more solutions like that too.
But do it as early as possible. Yeah. Wait until everybody is sober and write it down then.
Firstly, I just wanted to say thank you a lot for your time this morning. It's been really insightful. Secondly, I realize I know nothing about metadata until I came in here, so thanks for making me realize that. You know what I'm saying. I think my question was more or less his question, so I'm going to try and switch it up, because although I acknowledge everything you said, I kind of want that, like, dummy's guide to, like, not messing it. Like, if I'm someone that makes music, I've always thought metadata is basically the information you embed into that master file that then gets circulated and distributed. Museo, the Discogs, listing them up, making sure that that's congruent. They seem to me to be separate things. So I guess I'm seeking for clarity. So if I'm a producer, if I'm an engineer, and I make a track and I'm about to bounce out of Logic or Ableton, is there stuff I'm meant to do before that bounce? I remember iTunes back in the day where you used to put get info and then you could list everything, but did that put metadata onto the file? Like, I think for me, who's sitting on tons of music that I'm about to send off, hearing you lot speak, I'm like, bloody hell, like, I've got to make sure it's all embedded in there. So I guess step by step with these files, what do I need to do to not piss off people like you? I guess.
It takes more to piss us off, don't worry. I think, first of all, the metadata does not necessarily need to travel with the audio or does not need to be embedded in the audio. There needs to be a link between one and the other, absolutely, so that they don't get separated, logically separated, not physically separated. I don't have a dummy's guide. There is actually a thing called CLIP, Creators Learn About Intellectual Property, which has been, Nicholas Melander was mentioned here earlier. Together with WIPO, they created a resource that tries to explain some of the processes there, and it is worth looking at. I have no idea what the URL is, but if you search for WIPO and CLIP, CLIP, then that should get you en route. But the one line sentence is really as early as possible. Write down who did what, when, and what was the outcome, and feed that into the supply chain. So if you want to publish this stuff, if you're a self-publishing record company, and somehow you need to get it to a DSP. DSPs, they all accept the information in a format. Typically DDEX ERN is one format, obviously. I say obviously. But most of those self-serving musicians' services, they enable delivering it in that format. So they will have a web form or whatever where you can fill in the information. Make sure that it's in there. Because if Deezer doesn't have the information and Deezer sends on a sales report to a music rights society or a record company, specifically music rights society or publisher, they wouldn't know necessarily who the writers are, and therefore there's a gap. But if they have that information, they can pass it on, and you get your money much earlier.
And maybe just one thing also to add. So you have this side, and then you have all the information for if it's new content, and we don't know anything about the artist or the type of tracks, it's also important for us to get information so that we can have a proper cold start. So we know who to recommend it to, because it's important for us to make sure that the artist meets their potential fans. So that's this part also, like, it's about, like, who created, who is responsible, and then you have, like, the actual description of what this track is, so that we can make sure that it meets its fan.
If I use Ditto, and like you said, Ditto rejects if I don't fill out everything the way that they want. However, the ownership, so if I want to move from this, if I want to take more ownership to myself, the second part that you said, where do I put that description?
Keep hold of it. Don't just put it in. Wherever, just make sure that you don't put it into any of those services without keeping hold of the files, the sound files, and the metadata. Because I have been told, I cannot prove that, that some of these aggregators don't like you leave. Therefore, they will make it very tricky for you to get the data. So keep hold of it on a Google Drive, on your hard disk, on a piece of paper, but keep it. So we have, I think, 3 minutes left.
Perhaps one thing.
Five.
About
Hello
that.
There.
Oh, sorry.
I'm Axel. I run a label and a publishing company. And I came in here knowing a lot of what you've been talking about. And I think that a lot of people in the room knows IPI, DDX, ISRC, ISWC, etc. Let's have a conversation about the labels and the publishers who have everything in order, and your comments on whether the system is, if everything is in order, flawless, and if not, what? You're nodding, yeah. Let's have a conversation about that. So there's a lot of us here who do deliver IPI, who do deliver ISRC, who have a publisher, who have maybe a Spotify preferred or Apple Music preferred distributor partner, etc. How is the system working as is, and what are your thoughts about the coming 5 years?
Just a few words about that. So, and it's also an answer before, because for that, what does that mean?
5 minutes.
Okay. I can see perhaps fire or... I'm sorry about that. So don't worry about pissing off us. The system is not perfect, and we have to take care all together about that. And today there's not one process. So unfortunately, you guys, you have to learn about the chain of value. And if I put my data there, I have also to take care about if Deezer backstage, if Spotify, Spotify for artists. But it's not enough because you have other platforms. You have exports, you have Asia, you have... So, sorry about that, but you have a little bit to learn how it works. And not saying at the end of the process, shall I be paid about that? But we can just, help you to how describe the journey and where you have to take care about that. Because I'm sorry, but you will not, it will, one day perhaps, I really hope that, you will have just to put one data in one side of the process and you get everything on the other side. But it's not working like that.
Just repeating my question, can we define some of the problems and then talk about what will happen in the future and how we will solve them, apart from having our data in order?
So, one of the problems is that many people don't have their data in order. So they put incomplete data in. When a record company wants to push out a product, they will push out the product. When Beyoncé yells at the A&R manager, they will just put the product out whether they have all the metadata collected or not. Therefore, the stuff goes out, and then what Fiona was said, we're all janitors cleaning up after them. Ideally, a DSP would simply say, oh, sorry, Beyoncé, your product doesn't come in because you didn't put in an ISWC or whatever. It's not going to happen. Somebody will lose their job over that if they made that decision. And I don't know whether Beyoncé does that, by the way. But there are many of these kind of decisions that exist throughout the life cycle of a piece of music. Somebody writes a piece of music, and they forgot that there was a writer in the room who contributed, who only came into the fold a year later. Suddenly, all the calculations need to be redone for those kind of things. So, while ideally, if all the data were collected at the time of creation of the music, who wrote the stuff, who played which instrument, and all of those bits, they would put in the information in an electronic readable format, it will then automatically flow into the record company, who will then forward all the information to a DSP, to a neighboring rights society like Sound Exchange for the artists. Then we would not have any problems, except that there are people in the way that where every now and then it does not.
And machines. Down. And machines.
And machines and commercial prerogatives. In the past, the music industry was really crap in the sense that I would happily hurt myself if I can only hurt you as well. That has gone to a great deal away. People are much more collaborative these days. Record companies are happily passing on ISWCs if they have them. But they need to get them.
I think from my perspective, where we've seen completeness of the data on both sides, the next bigger hurdle and challenge is the integration to the user of the music, and really understanding that there should be that feed, that level of information in your system as you're using the content. You see it in the gaming space, you see it in the new ways of music being used, educating that you do need this level of integrated data and you need to be able to pull that. That, I think, is a step that we still need to get through, because getting them to understand that integration is important to fund and have, so you're getting the right feeds, I still think is been one of the challenges once, if there is clean data to even start.
I think that was the perfect word to end the show. Thank you very much to my co-conspirators here. Thank you very much for being here, and enjoy the rest of the show. Thank you very much.